We need to talk about credit. It's the elephant in the room. What credit score is needed to buy a house? Can a credit score of 550? How about 630? 725? 802? How do you know? And how much home can you afford? All this and more today on Indy's Real Estate Gurus radio show.
Branch NMLS number 33041. Rick Ritmus NMLS number 664589. Ian Arnold NMLS number is 1995469. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply.
Welcome to Indy's Real Estate Gurus, brought to you by Advisors Mortgage Group and Fix It Mortgage. Our branch NMLS is 33041. Now, here's your host, the hard-working mortgage guy, Rick Ritma.
Welcome to Indy's Real Estate Gurus. I'm Rick Ritma, your hard-working mortgage guy.
And I'm Ian Arnold with Advisors Mortgage Group.
And thank you so much for joining us today. We truly appreciate it. If you would like to contact Ian or I, please go to hardworkingmortgageguys.com. That's hardworkingmortgageguys.com. We can help you with any questions you have in mortgages, refinances, purchases, you know, cash out refinances, reverse mortgages, whatever it happens to be, or just general questions. Maybe you want to know what interest rates are going to do. Just give us a call or just go online, to hardworkingmortgageguys.com. We'd be more than happy to answer your questions. The Fed rate hike, we're recording this show right before the rate hike, unfortunately, but we feel pretty confident that the Feds are going to raise the federal fund rate by 75 basis points. When you hear that the Feds raise the interest rates, that is not a direct correlation to mortgage rates going up. It is a short term. It raises your, if you have a home equity line of credit based on prime, or if you have a credit cards, those are the short-term loans, and those are the ones that are going to go up. Mortgage rates, depending on how much they actually raise it, our expectations right now is 75 basis points. So, Ian, with that base, you know, with that thought of 75 basis points, I don't know, do you agree? I think it's pretty much going to stay where it's at. Could change a little bit. It may be a little knee-jerk reaction, but the market's already adjusted for it.
Yeah, but we see this all the time, is when they first do it, that next day or two, you have the knee-jerk reaction, as we were just saying. And then everything goes back to norm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, don't look at it too much. I mean, so if you're wanting to possibly lock a rate, you might want to do it within that 1 or 2 day mark, but do it quick.
Depending on which way that mark goes.
Yes.
That knee-jerk reaction can be good or bad.
It could, yep.
So if it's good, lock it.
I will say this. Since we are recording this a little early, we're saying it's 75 points. So if it's 75 points, man, we're good at our job.
Yeah, but if it's 100 points, which is another option, I don't think that's what's going to happen. And I'd like to say, because we have some special insight, but the reality is the Feds tend to leak what they're going to do to the Wall Street Journal, and then they tell us what's going to happen.
Hey, so don't give away our secrets.
That's what the market is expecting. But that doesn't mean it's what's going to happen. Sometimes they change their mind in their meeting, and the meeting is actually it started on Tuesday. It finished on Wednesday at 2 o'clock. We're recording because I have to be out of town during the show, so we had to record early. But anyway, if it does go up by 100 basis points, now I think many people would hear that and they'd think, oh, that's going to be bad for mortgage rates. But what do you think, Ian?
It's going to be basically the same thing. I mean, it might go down a little bit, but again, I don't think it's going to change too much. Again, you'll have that first day or two knee-jerk reaction, but what they're trying to do is bring it down. But who knows what will happen, but I think it'll probably pretty much stay pat.
I think that if it's 100 basis points because the expectation is 75 basis points, there's going to be more of a reaction, and it definitely is much more likely to have a pretty significant knee-jerk reaction. But ultimately, that 100 basis points should be good for the market, for the rate market, and should lower rates, but that may take a while. And the reason is because the raising of the federal fund rate is to control inflation. Inflation is, as I've said before, the biggest negative to mortgage rates. Mortgage rates are a bond. They're traded on the market as a bond. Bonds are fixed rate investments. inflation erodes the value of a bond. And so we really, you know, the expectation is that at 75 basis points, if they do 100, I think that actually says that to a lot of the investors, because that's really who's, you know, it's who's going to invest, how much are they going to put in, that type of thing. So a lot of the investors are going to look at that as that's they're really trying to control inflation. And if they are trying to control inflation, that should be good for bonds. And they might, I think that'll bring, ultimately bring the rates down a little quicker. I do think it's going to bring rates down even if they do 75 basis points at some point, but it's going to take a while. And as we've talked before, inflation, the inflation year over year numbers are just going to be going up through the summer. That's our expectation. I would be very surprised if it's anything but that. The other thing I wanted to talk about is this, the second quarter GDP, gross domestic product, is coming out. I think it's on Friday. The first quarter gross domestic product, GDP, came out at negative 1.6, and that is the estimate for the second quarter. And when you get two negative quarters in a row, historically, like every single time it's happened.
Yep, last 10 out of 10 times, yeah. Recession.
Yes, but that's not the determining factor.
No, there are more things to it, yes.
Right. And there's actually a group called the NBER, the National Bureau of Economic Research, which is actually the ref in this whole thing. They're the ones who say, you know, they look at everything, and they look at the depth, the diffusion, and the duration, and then they're the ones who call it. Now, they have called it 10 out of 10 times, you said?
Yes.
10 out of 10 times when we had two
Two quarters
in a row of negative GDP. The other thing that you have to remember is they revise these numbers for 3 months. Well, for they it comes out in July. They'll revise it in August, and they'll revise it in September. So the final number will come out in September, which means that it could take a little while before they actually, the refs say, hey, we're in a recession. I personally believe we're in a recession. I laugh at what they say in the political arena. It's kind of funny. And it's actually kind of funny listening to some of the talk radio. I was listening to one the other day, and they were talking about it. They said, oh, you know, and let me tell you, I don't want to get political, but they were laughing at what was being said out of the White House. Okay, and how they had changed the way this is done. And the reality is, as much as I don't like to defend the White House right now, they didn't change anything. They're just trying to tell people the way this is done.
Yeah.
And I mean, the refs.
I mean, we always, to the normal person, is you're going to look at the least amount of data and try to make an observation. So most likely when you see two negative quarters, all right, that basically always equals a recession. So that's easy for you and I just go, hey, two negative quarters. Now, if I told you two negative quarters, and then you got to add this, and then you got to add this, and then you got to do this, and this, and this, that's a lot more to comprehend. It's easier to say that. So yes, there is a lot more to it, but we're just looking at the, all right, on average, 10 out of 10 times, looks like.
That's not even on average.
I know. Hey, 100% is still an average.
Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I believe we're in a recession. I have for quite some time, so I just think it's just a matter of them saying we're in a recession, really. But it's always in retrospect when they look at things, they go back and say, okay, it looks like we're in a we were in a recession at this point in time, and I do believe that's the case. The other piece is the unemployment numbers, and we're starting to see those go up, and that's. You know, everybody says, well, the unemployment numbers are so low. But that's when a recession starts. It's when they're at their lowest, mm-hmm. and they turn and start going back up. It's another telltale sign that we're in or going into a recession, along with a variety of other things that are going on that we're seeing. Inflation is another big one. There's just so many things that happen that it just really I do believe that we're in a recession. But on a positive note, that's usually good for interest rates. Always, I mean, historically has been very good for interest rates. It's been good for the housing market. Housing values, other than in 2008, when it was caused by housing, housing values held their own and even appreciated. And as we expected, we're seeing house appreciation go down a little bit, but not negative.
No.
We were at 20%, 19%. Unsustainable number. Okay, a historic high number, and it came down a little bit. And, you know, the media wants to run around and say, oh, look at this, look at this. Well, that's it's still very good, and expectations are still very good. So let's talk about one other piece in the numbers, because I've heard it on the radio quite a bit. Let's look at the recession numbers. You know, they're being reported, and it's how they're reporting them, and they're being reported as these numbers we missed, you know, the repossessions have gone way up, and they've kind of misleading. And it shows how you can take statistics and totally mislead people. And it goes back to what they were talking about on the radio show I told you about. You know, these guys who are telling us that they're changing the way, you know, they're changing the rules.
Yep.
The reality is that it's my problem, and I've told you this long time ago with the news media. Every time I know something about what they're talking about, they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So if I don't know what they're talking about, I now assume they're wrong. So I really struggle with that. But anyway, let's talk about the recession. So Adam Data Solutions, which is a big reporter, reported that lenders repossessed 20,750 properties during the first 6 months of 2022. And this is the number they want to do. That's up 113%. So in 2021, we had 9,739 repossessions. And now we're up 113%. We're over 20,000. But if I remember right, there was basically a moratorium on repossessions.
Oh, yeah. You couldn't do that. I mean, even, what is it? Even renters. Could not renters could not evict people. I mean, there was so much gray area and there was so much cutoff that the government put in process that you couldn't get rid of people.
Right.
So what happened is they got backlogged.
Yeah.
So and then they kept pushing them back, and once those periods ended, hey, guess what? Now you have a cluster. Right? Now your number's going to jump for the next couple months, and then it'll come right back down.
Right. But, and even then, These houses that go into repossession may not actually be repossessed. Okay, that's a misnomer too.
Correct.
It goes into repossession, and it can take sometimes a year or two. Most times it's 3 to 6 months, but it can take longer than that.
But and think about this: is most of those numbers going to change? Because last year, again, Indiana, their equity rose 19%. And then this year, we're close to like 17, 18% again. So think of how much equity that house would have got. You could easily sell it. I mean, depending on everybody's situation is different. But if you had the equity and just got out of it.
Right. So let's look at, okay, they want to report it from last year, which was a historic low because of things that were unusual in the market. Actually, the government stepping in,
yeah,
and controlling the market, which lowered it significantly. So 2019, pre-COVID, pre any issues, repossessions for 2022 compared to 2019, they're down 70%. And we're down 88% from 2017. That's incredible.
Yeah, that's a huge number.
Why aren't they reporting that? Why are they only reporting it up 113% to scare everybody?
Fear sells, sir.
I know they do. Fear sells. It's the easiest thing in the world to sell. And, you know, the other part of this is we have the average loan to value on properties in the U.S. is 42%. So if you have the average person who has a $100,000 home owes $42,000 on it, according to, now this is including people who owe cash. They own,
yep,
it free and clear.
Zero.
All that.
All the way up to 97%.
Right. Or even more.
Yep.
Could be even higher. But because of this, and that's one of the highest levels, I think it is the highest level we've ever seen. So it's just really great loan to values. And it's really hard. Who's going to have their house repossessed when they have a 40, even a 70% loan to value?
Nobody.
Why would you repossess the home? You're going to sell it and get your money.
Even if you're at 100%, guess what? you're 100%, you just sell it and call it even.
If you can. Yeah. You still have fees.
I mean,
and
you might have
that's a short sell, probably. Yeah. But how many people do you know at 100%?
Yeah.
We don't finance 100% anymore.
No. And you're not foreclosing on 100%.
No, you're not. It's not happening. So with that, we are at a break. After the break, we're going to go over, talking about credit. It's the elephant in the room.
You're listening to Indy's Real Estate Gurus, brought to you by Advisors Mortgage Group and Fix It Mortgage. Now back to your host, the hard-working mortgage guy, Rick Rickma.
The question of the week is brought to you by the renovation loan, helping you buy a home, a house that may need some work. And this is actually done through us. It's a great program that we do that you can, if you find a house that just needs a little bit of work to it, maybe needs a new kitchen or needs some new flooring, HVAC system, you can actually still get the house and get that stuff taken care of.
Yeah, it's a great program if you're looking at a house and it needs, even if it doesn't necessarily need any work, but you want to redo the kitchen or your own house, but you want to buy a house and redo the kitchen, redo the baths, whatever, that's a great option for that type of purchase.
Yep. So last week's question is, the red house is on the white street and the blue house is on the red street. Where's the white house? Well, of course, people, it's in Washington, D.C.
It is. It always has been. No matter where the red or blue houses are, the White House is in Washington, D.C.
That is true. All right. So the new question is, what has a bank but has no money in it?
Wow.
That'll make you think for a little bit.
Yep.
So let's get back to talking about this. We're talking about credit and the elephant in the room. When somebody's looking at getting approved for a home, let's start there. How much does credit matter?
Credit matters quite a bit.
Okay.
It matters in a variety of ways. Number one, can you be approved? Number two, what's your rate going to be? What's the interest rate going to be? How much are you going to have to put down? So it makes a huge difference on what you're going to be, whether you're going to be able to finance, and then what your financing is going to look like.
Okay. And let's be honest, everybody knows the better credit, the better. So
correct.
Let's go with this. So if I'm at a 690 right now, should I wait until I get to 720 to get a house?
Well, it depends. I would say as a general rule, no, it doesn't make any sense to do that. As a general rule, what I would say is if you have a 690 credit score, what you would want to do is get with us, go to hardworkingmortgageguys.com, contact us from our website. And once you've done that, then we would want to pull credit. We'd want to look at your credit. And then we can run a scenario to see what might need to happen to get the credit scores where they need to be. If we can get it from a 690 to over a 700, that may make a difference in your rate. It may not. We need to look at that and see if it's going to change anything. It depends on whether you're using FHA or conventional financing. So it does depend on what you're actually doing. But we want to look at that and then help you, guide you through if you need to do any repair on your credit. I've had people who, they were a 690. I ran our scenarios. I could get them to a 720. But I did that while they were in the process of either buying a house or refinancing the house. Or in the finance of the house. I've had people who they buy a house, they did a pre-approval, but they didn't start the credit repair at that point. But then when they got the house, now they're ready, they want to do something. I run my scenario, I give them what they need to do, and then they do that. We send it in, we do what's called what I call a rapid rescore. So I think they call it something different, but it rescores the credit and it jumped it up. And now we got a better rate based on the higher credit score, but we get the better rate based on the day we lock the rate. The other piece is whether rates are going up or down, which direction do we think they're going to go? That can make a difference. If you wait, let's say you have a 690 credit score and you wait 6 months, and you do it yourself and you think you're going to have a 720, and then you don't get there.
Okay. So, all right. So we understand credit scores. You want a better credit score. But roughly, what's the lowest score you can have and still get a home?
Well, it depends. 640 pretty much on a conventional. 620 on an FHA, although in certain scenarios we can go to a 580. There are programs out there, non-conforming programs, that they can go as low as 500. But you don't go below a 620 on an FHA or a 640 on a conventional without other factors that are compensating for the credit score, like large down payment. You come in, you say, I don't want to put any money down. I have 550 credit scores, and I just started my job yesterday. No compensating factors can make it very difficult.
Yep. All right. And I will tell you this. With the lower scores, usually we need more documentation. I will say that. And
yeah, it takes more work.
Yep. Right. So
more risk to the lender.
Yep. So the higher the score, the easier it makes it on you and us. So
absolutely. And not just the easier, it's easier, but it's also a lot better for the customer if we can get that credit score up. Mm-hmm. If there's anything we can do. If they can finance, they should go ahead and do that. But we can, while they're trying to finance, we can work in that credit.
All right. So does credit actually affect how much you can afford?
Yes, it does for a variety of reasons. Number one, it affects the interest rate. And the interest rate is going to affect what you can afford. Number two, you're not going to be able to go to the same debt to income ratios that somebody with higher credit scores can go to. So it does very much affect what you can afford.
Okay. All right. So talking about the whole Ford. So if I'm looking at getting my first house and I'm sitting at home playing on a computer, how can I find out just quickly how much I can afford?
I'm sorry, but the best way to do it is to go to hardworkingmortgageguys.com, fill out the information there, send it to us, and then Ian or I will get back to you.
Yeah. And here's the reason why we say that is it's not an easy 1 + 1 = 2 calculation. There are tons of things that is how much do you owe on your card? How much payments do you have on credit cards, student loans? Even if you're not making student loans, if they're deferred, there's still we have to run calculations. And depending on what program, depends on how much we have to say that you would be getting charged on that per month. So there are tons of calculations. So yes, the easiest way, and it takes 5-10 minutes, we can have you some pretty good answers.
And it's not just calculation. Yeah. You hit on it too. Which program?
Yes.
Is it conventional? Is it FHA? Are you a first-time home buyer? Is it USDA? Do you qualify as a VA? Then what are your credit scores? Oh, what's your income? Oh, you think your income is X, but we may not count it the same way. If you haven't been there long enough, we may not be able to count some of the income, or if you've had a downturn in income. So we have to get all the information to give you accurate numbers. And you don't want to have wrong number when you're out there looking for a house. The other thing is you have to have an accurate interest rate. When you go to a lot of these online pre-qualification type systems where you just put it in there and you put in your own numbers and it kicks out your interest rate and all that, those are what I have found very inaccurate. You need accurate information. So go to hardworkingmortgageguys.com and contact us from there.
Hey, let's be honest. If you spend 30-40 minutes on your own trying to figure this out, how much is your time worth? It could take us maybe 10-15-20 minutes, and then you have accurate numbers.
That's the key. It's accurate.
And your time is always money. So why waste your time? I mean, let's look at it. Waste our time.
Yeah. Well, it's not even wasting our time.
I know, but I'm just saying that.
To me, and I've been around a long time, I don't understand why you wouldn't want to go right to an expert who knows what they're doing, who can do it, and they'll save you time, energy, money, and give you accurate information.
All right. So as we were talking about that, so what type of income do you look at before taxes income, or do we actually look at after taxes, or what you bring home when you look at your pay, somebody's pay?
You know, a lot of people have that question. You hear it all the time, and you know the answer. It's we look at before tax income. We look at what's called gross income. If you're employed and you're getting a paycheck, W-2 person. If you're not a W-2 person, you're a 1099 self-employed 1099 person, that's totally different. Yeah. And that definitely, I mean, there is no question that requires us to look at it, because there are a ton of rules, makes it more, there's more difficulty and for the customer and documentation, but it certainly can be done. It's not that difficult. It just requires more documentation.
And you're not joking. Even my wife, and she's an accountant, like she'll say, "Oh, well, we make this much." I'm like, "No, honey, you can't look at take home, because everybody's take home is going to be different. I mean, you have to look at before, because whether you have kids, whether you, what your insurance costs, what all the taxes, what tax bracket you say you are dependents you put on there, that changes everything.
It's so all
that's,
gross.
Yep. So that's why we always look at what everything is before.
Yep.
We got about a minute or so left. How often, or how would you look at locking a rate right now?
Well, I think it's one of those things we just have to look at and see. Right now, I tend to go on locking a rate, especially in a market like this where the volatility is there and it's more likely the rates are going to go up. I would be very leery of not locking the rate. It can for long as we watch it on a hour by hour basis, it could be okay, but I wouldn't necessarily do that. Another piece of that you're probably going to ask me is, what does locking it mean? What happens is when we lock a rate is we go out and we actually lock that rate with conforming or FHA or VA, USDA, whoever we're doing that through. We actually pay them and lock that rate in for you. And so if it goes up or down, you get the rate that we locked in as long as nothing changes in your documentation.
And we can lock it for 45, 60, 90 days easily. So it makes it so you're going through that process of buying the house. If it takes a week or two longer than what you anticipated, guess what? We can have that time period to have it locked longer.
Yeah, we can if you anticipate it up front. But it's not always that easy to anticipate up front. Next week, we're running out of time, so next week we're going to talk with Ray Sumeyer, Senior Vice President of Residential Services with Near North Title Group, and he's going to talk about how to survive your first mortgage closing. Again, thank you so much for joining us. This is Rick Ritma, your hardworking mortgage guy.
And this is Ian Arnold, Advisors Mortgage Group.
Thanks again. Have a great weekend.